This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
As we go along, let us study the male anatomy. Most men know less about their own bodies than they do about their automobiles.
This is a trap! To our
the following feature has been rated R.
Don't panic.
This program contains coarse language.
It is recommended for people aged 15 years and over.
Are you ready? Sit back, turn up the volume, and enjoy our show.
Welcome.
Get ready for the ride.
Hide and seek. Hide and seek. Hide and seek.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. You're with myself, Tim Little. Big thanks to the Chicks Talking Footy and my lovely co-host, Ben.
Hello, Tim. It's lovely to be here again on a Wednesday night.
I know. What else would we do on a Wednesday?
I don't know.
And Mark is joining us yet again this
Hello.
Week.
Yes.
Welcome, Mark.
Thank you.
And we were having an interesting off-air conversation about your little travels. Now, on the last show that I was with you, we were talking about your planned trip to Berlin, but you've also been somewhere else that most would not have been.
Yeah, I went to North Korea in April.
Wow.
Different experience than Berlin, I'm sure.
A very well, actually, the second biggest group of tourists to North Korea is actually Germans.
Oh, okay. Really?
Just behind the Chinese, yeah.
Okay. And what did you find fascinating about this trip? I have so many questions.
Oh, look, the whole trip itself was surreal. I mean, the fact that I'm sort of being chaperoned around myself on my own by two tour guides and a driver for the whole trip. So
How
I wasn't
bizarre.
Out of anybody's sight.
Wow. And so it was very strictly controlled. And what about, were there gay clubs?
Yeah.
Oh,
were you
no,
scared to be a gay man in North Korea?
Well, I wasn't. I'd researched beforehand, so I certainly wasn't scared to be a gay man there because there's no laws or anything against it. It's not something that they sort of say is illegal.
Right.
But the official word is that there's no gays in North Korea.
All right, okay. but when you went on Grindr, was there anybody online?
Well, okay, so going on Grindr was a little bit hard because there was no internet access for the whole week I was there.
Oh, well, that kills that.
Jeez.
They don't have, like, some special, like, under-the-radar internet?
There is an intranet, but it's only got about 16 sites, and it's really, really heavily controlled.
Right.
So I did see evidence of that when we went to the university.
Okay.
But it's miles behind anything that we sort of have access to.
And do they have a nightlife?
What do you want
yes,
me to say?
But this it's very different to, like, our nightlife sort of goes all night. It's not unusual to sort of stumble out of a club, as you would know it, seven in the morning, eight in
That's
the morning,
all right. Yeah.
Midday. but their nightlife sort of finishes up around 10 or 10.30 at night because they work 6 days a week.
Okay.
So it's very karaoke and it's lots
well,
of small
Well, it's
kind of
hard.
Bars,
I say
the restaurants
but
would have
sort of true and sort of
small
not.
Private
sort of
rooms
humorist, but
for your
what
group
do you,
because
know,
they don't
that's
like
an old-fashioned term.
A big group of people getting together.
Right. I often say security the worst footy commentator going
And what about things
the
like
most inaccurate?
Well, okay, so in Pyongyang,
white,
in the hotel,
middle-class man
had full access to
footy.
Electricity the whole time I was there. And it's really quite interesting to see that there's a contrast between a lot of the government buildings and a lot of the buildings they want you to sort of go, oh, wow, this is an amazing building. They've always got power.
Yep.
But then you look out from your hotel window across Pyongyang at night and you really only see
everything's
candlelight, or you go into a lot of the buildings that maybe aren't for show,
yeah.
and it's all low, really low voltage lighting, and it's really dark, or they have the lights switched off during the day
wow.
to save electricity. And then you go down to Kaesong, which is down near the border,
yeah.
and I was there for 10 minutes and the power went out, wow. and then it came back on, and then 10 minutes later it went out again. And
wow, I guess I'd be worried about attacks there.
No. Really, really safe. One of the safest places to visit as a Western tourist, apparently.
Wow. Right.
You were saying that you were staying in a hotel all by yourself. But like, how big was this hotel?
So this is what, maybe a 4-story hotel with...
That's like a horror movie.
With maybe 20-odd rooms on each floor.
Jeez.
And I was the only person booked into the hotel for the night.
Creepy.
But then you you go to the hotel I was staying in Pyongyang, and I was on the 43rd floor, which was the top floor of rooms, and I was the only person staying on that floor.
Right. So it was like Big Brother is watching, perhaps?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was like, why did you shower twice today, Mark? That was an actual question from my tour guides.
Wow, how fascinating.
That is fascinating.
Well, as fascinating as that all is, we aren't here to talk about North Korea tonight.
No.
But we do have some amazing news. And Dr. George is with us tonight as well. How are you going, Dr. George?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, and welcome to the show. Now, there is a bold new plan to eliminate HIV in Victoria.
That is exactly right. So, Emily, media release just released today from the Victorian State Government, from the desk of the Honourable Jill Hennessy, who is our Minister for Health, has released this. And it says, the Andrews government has unveiled a bold new plan to develop a cure for HIV, backed by more than $1 million in new funding.
Speaking today at the 5th Annual Bloodborne Virus and Sexually Transmissible Infections Forum, Jill basically said that there was a roadmap that they'd set out, which is Labor government strategy to improve prevention, testing and treatment of HIV and work with affected communities to reduce HIV stigma and discrimination. Now, this seems like a very broad plan. Mm. What are some of the other details, Ben?
Okie dokie. So it says its key targets are to have 95% of people with HIV diagnosed accessing the best treatment and achieving undetectable viral load by 2030, and to seek to eliminate HIV-related discrimination and stigma completely.
And it's also backed by a $1.2 million in funding to find a breakthrough cure for HIV. So they're not just thinking, okay, we'll chuck some prep at it,
yep.
but they're actually looking at a cure for HIV and investing in that as well.
Awesome. And in addition, a statewide testing week for sexually transmitted infections and bloodborne viruses in Victoria will be held in the second week of September.
That is great, because more testing, you know, the more people know about their status, the better.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, it's the first time an initiative of this kind has been held in Victoria, and it will boost education about the need for testing and rates of people being tested.
In Victoria, HIV continues to disproportionately affect gay, bisexual and other men who have sex with men. Removing the stigma and discrimination, Victorian laws, services and society is a key component to the HIV strategy.
And for the first time in Australia, the plan also acknowledges women, trans and gender diverse people as priority populations, which is fantastic news. The Labor government is continuing to expand access to the life-changing HIV prevention medication PrEP, which is mm-hmm. fantastic. It's always good to expand that trial. The evidence now shows it to be up to 99% effective in preventing HIV infections.
Excellent.
And what are your thoughts about this, Dr. George?
Look, I think there's many good things about this. I would love to see a cure for HIV as much as the very next person. However, I think we also have to be realistic and let's look at the cards that we have on the table right now.
Sure.
So I think the key points are is that we are now in a situation here in Victoria, and another statistic that was released recently, it turned up on my Facebook feed, but there has been a drop in new HIV diagnoses in the first quarter of this year here in Victoria. So I think that that's a very exciting statistic. And basically what we're saying is that our current strategies, which is increased testing, avail people to the opportunity to really good quality treatment, and the combination of PrEP and other options available to help prevent HIV, that we're really covering a nice wide ground. And I think this is important.
Definitely.
I always get a little bit funny about that, you know, some of the wording in that press release I found a bit odd, in that, like, eradicate HIV.
Sure.
I want to get rid of the virus, but I think it's important that we, when we use words like eradicate, that we're actually being inclusive and we're saying to people who are living with HIV, we want to support you and we want to help you have optimal health and continue having optimal health. We don't want to eradicate anybody living with HIV. So that's the only thing that stuck out to me as a little bit discordant is the word that came into my mind at that point. But, but I actually think this is a really great thing that we're at the moment. The WHO just on the 22nd of this month has put PrEP and the HIV treatment dolutegravir onto the essential drugs list. So
that's
a world organization is saying, this is fantastic. We've got prevention treatment and a really potent HIV treatment that we consider so important that it should be available worldwide for everybody.
Sure.
So I think we're really at a crux. This is a point where I think we can actually get to the 2020 goals of, you know, zero seroconversions, zero AIDS deaths and zero stigma. I think that this is a very, very exciting thing.
And it's really good to see governments behind it too.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's a very important thing. And let's compare that to, I don't know, another government that's across the ditch that didn't even acknowledge homosexual men on World AIDS Testing Day.
Really?
Like, what the hell's that about?
Wow.
Mr. Trump.
Well, we're going to talk we're going to talk more about your sexual health very, very soon.
Have your say. SMS 0427 JOY 949.
Email on air at joy.org.au.
Hide and seek. Hide and seek. Hide and seek.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. You're with myself, Tim Little. I'm joined by Ben, the lovely Mark, and the always wonderful Dr. George.
Well, hello. Yeah.
And we are talking tonight about arse hygiene. It's a very broad topic, but we often speak about HIV.
It's a wide topic.
It's a wide topic, depending on the arse. We often speak about HIV, but not about the other STIs that can enter. Now, George, you were saying off air that there's been a rise in cases of things like Shigella.
Look, there has been some little spikes in Shigella. It's not like hugely on the radar at the moment, but Shigella is still going around, and it's bloody annoying.
Oh, it's awful.
Okay, and just for those playing along at home, Shigella is, and how do we get it?
Well, so Shigella is a bacterial infection, and what it basically does is it gives you really bad gut pain, cramping, diarrhea, some cases vomiting. But in people who are very, very if you're not well to start with, if you have cancer, if you have a crappy immune system, or if you're just, you know, a sickly kind of person, it can really knock you about. Now, the thing about Shigella is it's transmitted from poo to mouth.
Okay.
So a lot of people think, well, I don't eat poo. But here's the thing, right? Say, for example, you went to a friend's party, for example, and somebody enjoyed some anal sex at that party, or fingered a bottom or something like that, and then goes and touches surfaces or glasses
or a doorknob
or whatever like that, then you only need 20 particles of the bacteria to actually get inside your body to have a good old-fashioned infection. So the key to breaking Shigella is washing your hands before they go anywhere near your mouth. Hot water and soap will kill Shigella very, very easily, but you really have to break the cycle. I had the misfortune of enjoying this one a little while back, and I ended up in hospital for a week because I was crook as.
I had it too. I ended up in hospital. I had to go home from work. I thought there's something definitely wrong here. And then I spent 4 hours in the hospital waiting to get a stool sample.
Woohoo!
Because as soon as I got there, I just went...
But definitely hand washing, hand washing, hand washing. Now, if you happen to work in the health industry or food service and you get Shigella, it's actually mandated that you cannot return to work until you've had two clean stool samples. So, if you are a contract worker, it's very significant. It can stop you from working for, say, up to a month. So, it's important that we look after each other. And look, I understand, like, say, for example, the recently we had Southern Hibernation. And a lot of people are really excited about this. They'll buy tickets to parties or stuff like that. And they're so excited about that. Then the day before they go, oh, I'm a bit crook.
Yeah.
And they still go to the party instead of thinking, actually, I'm a bit crook and there's a chance that I could be passing something on to somebody. So, it's important that if you're unwell, do consider about the events you're going to attend because, you know, there's always the chance.
So, the only way of passing on Shigella to someone else is via poo to their
mouth. It's basically fecal contamination to blood. So, it could come through food services or something like that. Contaminated water in places where the infrastructures can be damaged. If you get poo on your hands and it can be easily be transferred, even something as simple as oral sex after somebody's had anal sex. That's a really easy way for it to transmit.
And how is it treated?
It's with antibiotics.
Okay.
For most people, some people can clear it quite successfully. If you've got a good, strong immune and you're healthy, a lot of people will just think they had a little bit of diarrhea and they'll clear it. And they never knew that they actually had an infection.
Right.
However, if you're symptomatically unwell, then you do need antibiotics and not super strong. They're just a tablet twice a day, but you will need to have this significant treatment. I suppose the key points to note is that with Shigella, you get a high fever, bloody diarrhea, or profuse watery diarrhea, and you just feel like crap. Mm-hmm. You really feel unwell.
And what about in terms of foods that you eat at the time to minimize discomfort? Because I know when I had it, I had no idea what I could eat or not.
Well, it's interesting. The key point is fluid resuscitation. So, sports drinks can be a little bit strong. So, I think watered down sports drinks can be good. If you're not really a fan of that, you can get apple juice and just water it down halfway.
Right.
And then the key is boring, bland food. So, I say boiled chicken, rice, well-cooked pasta, toast, crackers. If it's white and boring and bland, then it's probably going to be okay. But now is not the time for super spicy foods or you know, a good old-fashioned bran muffin or something like that. It might just be a bit too upsetting for the gut.
Well, that sounds delightful.
Hope you're not eating your bran.
What other infections do you have for us?
Well, I just happened to bring in my little Dr. George sampler bag, so should we dip in and get the next one out?
Let's do it, George. What else is on the rise?
Oh, my God. I am sick to death of gonorrhea. Can we talk about the amount of gonorrhea bloody notifications I am doing at the moment? People, get swabbed.
Swabbed, okay.
Please get swabbed.
Why do you think that's increasing?
Why do I think that gonorrhea is increasing?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. After the ASHM conference last year, I was super excited to learn that actual, like, we were worried that we couldn't understand why so many people had gonorrhea in their throat, but also why people had a lot of gonorrhea in the butt. Because we thought there's not enough penises with gonorrhea to account for all of these cases. What we found is that gonorrhea can be transmitted through saliva. So, if you've got gonorrhea in your throat and you were to use spit for lube or spit for fingering somebody's butt, that's a wonderful way of transferring it.
Wow, never thought about that.
A good hard snog, you can transfer gonorrhea from throat to throat.
Yep.
And yeah, sure, you could pass gonorrhea from the throat to the penis easy enough. But a number of penises to the throat is actually less than we thought it was. So, it was an interesting vector. But I suppose the key points are is that as part of a good sexual health screening, and all people who are sexually active should get a full sexual health screening every year. If you've had more than 10 sexual partners, it's every 6 months, or if you're particularly successful or you're on PrEP, then you should be getting a full sexual health screening every 3 months, right? And that includes a throat swab for chlamydia and gonorrhea, a bum swab for chlamydia and gonorrhea, a urine test for chlamydia and gonorrhea, and blood tests for HIV, syphilis, hepatitis C. If you're HIV positive, then you probably don't need to test for HIV. but certainly syphilis is an important one, and everybody should be getting tested for that.
Sure.
As well,
we're going to talk more about arse hygiene and general sexual health here on Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. You're with myself, Tim Little. I'm joined by Ben, Mark and the lovely George.
Well, hello again.
And we've been talking about arse hygiene tonight.
Very, very important topic.
Very, very important. And we were also talking about STIs in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a whole range of STIs that you can get other than HIV. One of them is Shigella. We spoke in length about that. And also gonorrhea. What are some of the other nasties we need to be aware of?
Oh, my Lord. There's... Oh, it's... I don't even know why people have sex, to be honest, honestly.
Oh, come on.
Must be good or something. No, but okay, well, you know, rectal chlamydia, that's going around at the moment. So around the bum, the main things are chlamydia, gonorrhea, and some of the thing, nasty Shigella. I suppose it's as sexually transmitted as anything else. But warts, really, really common. Herpes, really, really common. But here's the interesting thing, is that if you are a man who has sex with other men, you are 40 times the risk of developing anal cancers.
Is that because you're very active in that area?
It's because you would have had more exposure to the human papilloma virus, the HPV virus.
Ah, fascinating.
Now, so it's 40 times the risk if you are HIV negative. If you're HIV positive, then it's 100 times the risk.
Whoa.
This is more than prostate cancer. It is more than bowel cancer, and it is more than breast cancer. Yet, nobody is freaking talking about this.
It's not even on my...
No.
You know, it's not even on my radar of things to, you know... sexually transmitted things to consider of sex and active and let's have...
Well, this is why it's really, really important that we get the conversation going on about this. Because, so I, as a doctor, feel that I have an important role in discovering whether or not this stuff is there. So, if somebody comes into me for a sexual health screening, I actually do the anal swabs. Like, a lot of people will just give... They'll pass you the cotton swab and send you off to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But for me, it's an opportunity to have a quick look at the bottom and see... Is there anything there that we need to know about? Are there warts? The amount of times I've seen a syphilis sore on the ass is more than I care to count up.
Sure.
It's a number that's higher than my capacity to remember things at times. but the other thing is that anal cancers, right, the sooner you detect them, the better. So if you pick one up and it's less than a centimeter, it can be treated quite simply and it's got a 100% cure rate. Once they get bigger than that, then it starts becoming problematic and that can lead to needing radiotherapy, chemotherapy, significant surgeries. It's really quite a horrible thing.
What are some of the symptoms that we need to be aware of?
Well, rectal bleeding is always an important one. So, if you're bleeding from the butt, it is worthwhile talking to your doctor about. The other thing is that if you feel like you can't fully empty your bowels, you go to the bathroom and then it's kind of like that feeling of, there's like a little nugget still left in there, then that could actually be a cancer. Sometimes pain, sometimes nothing at all. And that's why it's important, particularly if you're HIV positive, that you should consider two important things. One is that get your doctor to do a quick sweep of the bum. 70% of anal cancers are only within the finger's reach within the bum. So if you feel any lumps inside the anal canal, it's worth getting them checked out. And the other thing that's really, really important is consider getting the HPV vaccine or Gardasil. So it's a series of three injections. Unfortunately, the government has deemed it not worthy of being covered under the PBS. So it's a little bit more expensive. Where I work currently, it's $165 an injection and it's a series of three injections. However, it's bloody worth it because it greatly reduces the incidence of anal warts and it greatly reduces the chances of anal cancers.
So it's a prevention strategy.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful prevention strategy. Now, we used to say if you are over the age of 25, it's not worth doing because you've probably already been exposed to the viruses. However, the Spank study, which is being done in Sydney right now, has discovered that most people have not been exposed to all four of the main viruses that are associated with anal cancers. So it's totally changed my approach to this. And now I tell everybody, it doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter whether you're a virgin or whether you've been around the block multiple times. Mm. It's very, very important. Consider getting the HPV vaccine. It's called Gardasil. Mm-hmm. And hopefully very, very soon, there's going to be a new one that comes out that covers 9 strains of the HPV virus.
And anyone can request that to their doctor?
Yes, as long as you can say in a loud and clear voice, I would like to have this vaccine, I will give it to people.
You've kind of blown my mind because, look, I mean, I test a lot. I like to test. I just like to test, you know?
Yep.
I like to test. And I have been offered before by my doctor or different doctors to do the swab themselves, but I always say, no, it's all right. I'll do it. But never have they...
Well,
said,
you know, it's interesting because it's an interesting new world because I do my own testing as well, and the doctor trusts that I'm smart enough to shove a cotton tip up my own bum, and I'm very active about making sure it's done properly. But even then, I got a test that came back that said it was insufficient. So I thought, okay, well, I need to go back and work, make sure I'm doing this right. And the most important thing is that... it needs to go in far enough because chlamydia gonorrhea can only grow on certain lining of the arse, and that's deeper in the arse. It's about 2 to 3 centimeters deep in the arse. So the swab has to go all the way in. Wetting the swab a little bit makes it easier to go in. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, the swab has to be in the arse for around about 30 seconds to make sure it absorbs enough of the bacteria. Mm. And I didn't know that. So it literally has changed the way that I do the swabs now.
And as well... if it comes back insufficient, is that what you said? Insufficient.
Insufficient meant that it didn't collect enough cells to be able to look at it and say, is there DNA for chlamydia or gonorrhea?
See, I've never had any tests come back insufficient. Have you ever?
No, never.
And what the hell's wrong with me then? Bloody hell.
And would my doctor call me back and say, oh, this test was insufficient? Or
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so that's something that she'd be doing. Okay, cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
With regards to the four
yeah, the four, the HPV viruses, yeah.
Can you get tested? Is there a test for those?
Look, there is. And this is an interesting area called the chap smear. So, the problem in the world of chap smears is that we're not 100% sure what the data means. So, what they do is they get a Dacron swab, wet it a little bit, and they place it inside the anus, and basically, to put it... hardly put a fringe on it, is to say they just swirl it around a bit and gather as many cells as they can, and then they look at what virus is present in there. Mm-hmm. And we're not 100% sure what it actually means. If the virus is present in the area, it doesn't mean that we necessarily have to treat it, because about 60 to 65% of these, if they are a medium grade, what are called a lesion, a medium grade lesion, they will go back to normal. And it's similar in women as well, that some people with a low-grade lesion in pap smears, it will go back to normal of its own accord. So, we're not 100% sure what we're supposed to do if we find these sort of results. But what we do know is that we can actually do the equivalent. Like, the next step from a pap smear for a woman is called a colposcopy, where they actually have a really good look at the cervix under a special light and microscope. And we can do the same with bums. But there's not many doctors who are able to do this particular test. So, the waiting list is quite long, and it's a difficult test to fully interpret. But the main points are is that one test that's very easy to interpret is a finger up the bum. Mm-hmm. If you can feel lumps inside the anal canal, they need to be investigated. Mm. So, I'm sure we've all had sexual partners that you do the dip and you might notice it's a bit more chocolate crackly than you'd expect. That's worth getting treated. If people have internal anal warts, if people have warts, it's absolutely worth getting treated. I think so. Anal warts it's not easy to treat because it's a bit of literally a pain in the butt.
Sure.
Whether it be treatment with a cream called Aldara, which is used 3 times a week, and that can make the bum quite sore.
Right.
You can get them frozen. You can get them lasered off. There's lots of different ways that we can remove warts, but absolutely, it's worth getting rid of them as well.
So, can they increase your chances of cancer?
Well, what we know is that the same virus that causes anal cancers is the same virus that causes anal warts.
Right.
So, where there's smoke, there's generally fire. Where there's warts, there's a higher risk of anal cancers.
Sure.
So, even if you've been infected with anal warts, that doesn't mean don't get the vaccine. It means do get the vaccine, because there can be a decreased chance of anal cancers if you've had the vaccine.
And what about sexual activities such as fisting and other types of penetration, if you like? Do they increase your chances of cancer?
Gosh, that's a bit of a tough question. I don't know the answer to that. I suppose if somebody has warts on their fingers, that could transmit, you know, it's skin-to-skin contact for the transmission of HPV or the wart virus.
Sure.
So, if somebody's got warts on their fingers, get them sorted out before you start playing Lucky Dip. But, yeah, that's an interesting question. I don't know whether fisting in and of itself would increase the risk of cancer in the butt.
Sure.
But certainly, it's part of that regime of the sexually adventurous. So, what we know is that fisting is a higher risk of hepatitis C transmission.
Right.
And unfortunately, there is no vaccines for hepatitis C. There's just there's treatment. Testing and very effective treatment now. Fantastic treatment now. So, as part of a full sexual health screening, hepatitis C is one of the ones that should be done for men who have sex with men. We used to think it was just the highly active, the sexually adventurous people who were doing a lot of orgies or who were doing a lot of fisting. Yeah. But now we know that even the boring old might get a little ride on the hobby horse on the weekend, then that's still a risk factor for hep C transmission as well.
Sure. Well, it only takes one bit of blood or whatever.
Yeah. And hep C is much easier to transmit than other viruses, say like HIV.
Sure.
Hep C is much, much, much easier to pass.
Sure. Mm. We are talking to Dr. George tonight about anal hygiene, and we've got more to come on the show. We're going to have a chat about bottoms and things that you can do as a bottom to protect yourself.
Joy 94.9.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Tonight we are discussing anal hygiene.
Buttholes.
And we have Dr. George in the studio, as well as myself, Tim Little, Ben and Mark.
Hello.
Hey.
And we were talking earlier about PrEP. Now, a lot of bottoms, shall we say, use things like Metamucil and psyllium to make sure that they're regular and clean.
Absolutely. And the use of fiber supplements is a wonderful thing. However, it's very, very important to note that PrEP or HIV medications and stuff like that, you shouldn't take them at the same time as the Metamucil. Mm-hmm. So, Metamucil is the common brand name for psyllium husks. By the way, tip for the punters out there, Metamucil is basically psyllium husks plus tang plus sugar.
Right.
And it's expensive, whereas you can go buy like a kilo of psyllium husks for like $5 if you go to a natural food store. Much cheaper. Tip for the people there.
Okay.
Doesn't taste as nice, but you can probably buy some tang too from... I don't even know where you'd buy tang these days.
I don't think you can get tang anymore.
Really? That's just sad. There's probably like a secondhand store on Smith Street you can pick some up from.
Probably.
Chip it away. But anyway, point of the matter is that when you digest it, it turns into a jelly-like substance and it can actually slow the absorption of drugs if you take it tablet at the same time. Now, PrEP is kind of important to be absorbed into the body. Mm-hmm. If it's not absorbing, it can't work.
Yeah.
So, the trick is if you're going to be using things like psyllium, then you just separate them by about 4 hours. So, take your PrEP in the morning, use the psyllium at night. Or use the psyllium in the morning, take your PrEP at night. Doesn't particularly matter, but just keep them separate. A good 4 hours block is probably enough to make sure that the psyllium's forward in the gut and the drugs are behind it.
So, it wraps itself around the medication.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever made a glass of Metamucil and then forgotten about it. It turns into like a jelly.
Yeah,
and that jelly absorbs water in the gut, which is what makes poo easier to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's some tricks with Metamucil as well, that if you have a lot of Metamucil and not much water, it'll make you super, super constipated. So, you have your teaspoon, mix it in with the water, drink it, and then have another big glass of water immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
That's an important thing. If you find that you just can't quite get psyllium right, then there's another product called Normafiber, which is actually little pellets.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't mix into water, but you just take a teaspoon of the pellets and swallow it down. And I actually think it works a little bit better. It seems to be less dependent on the amount of water you take on board.
So, it's a fiber supplement?
It is also a fiber supplement. It's just a slightly different way of taking it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any other tips you would give bottoms on maintaining
apart
a clean
from my phone
system?
Number or what?
What about people that go the other way? Like the Imodium, just want to stop everything
Look, you know what? I'm really... When I talk to guys who they manipulate their gut, so they use Imodium to stop the gut from moving, they don't eat to stop the gut from moving, I'm like, that's really sad. Food is one of the most exciting things in my day. I swing from meal to meal. So,
Dick is the most exciting thing in some other people's days. So.
Oh, look, if you've got the time for it, then rock on. I'm working 5 days a week at the moment. I don't know how anybody fits that much. Good luck them. Anyway... blah, blah, blah. But I don't think using Imodium in and of itself is not going to affect PrEP. If anything, it's going to make sure that the drug's absorbed because it'll be sitting in the gut ready to be absorbed much longer. Mm-hmm. It's more about make sure that the drug can dissolve and get absorbed into the system. If it's coated in a jelly-like substance, it's going to be harder for that to happen.
Are there negative effects to using things like GastroStop and Imodium all the time?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it. And the reason is, like, the gut has a natural rhythm. If if for the nerdy people in the room, go and download a podcast called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. It actually explains that the connection between stress and the connection between the gut. Say, for example, if we go back to Paleolithic times when we were being chased by saber-toothed tigers, right?
Yeah.
So, you got to run away. So, all of the blood gets diverted to the legs, to the eyes, to the brain, to the hearing. So, you can see, you can hear, and you can run the hell away. Sure. The last thing you need to be doing at that point is absorbing food. So, all of the blood gets sucked away from the gut and the gut slows down.
Right.
And then when everything's relaxed, the gut starts moving again. The problem is today, being yelled at by your boss is just as scary as being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. So, what happens is that people who have high anxiety disorders will always complain about, oh, I've got this irritable bowel stuff, I get constipated, then I get diarrhea. And that's because the gut's stopping, starting. Mm. And I think if you chemically induce that with use of Imodium and stuff like that, it can't be good for the rhythm of the gut.
Sure.
And I really think for good gut hygiene, and the other thing is that if you stop the gut from moving and food still gets put in there, it can actually dilate the colon. And in medical school, we always talk about toxic megacolon, which is like it's really big dilated colon, and it is a very powerful illness. And I think anything that we can do to keep the gut moving naturally is good, and that's reducing stress, getting 2 serves of fruit each day, getting 4 to 5 serves of vegetables each day. If you can do that in your diet, then you're going to have a gut that's nice and healthy.
Yeah.
Also interesting is the gut biome now, that we're now understanding that the bacteria that lives in our gut has a very important role. So, for this reason, I do recommend that people have acidophilus yogurt as part of their regular meals. And as a good citizen of bottoming, I think you should have some yogurt in your diet. If you're lactose intolerant, and some people of particular genetic origins, they don't tolerate lactose very well, you can get it in other ways. There's some fruit drinks that you can get that have lactobacillus and stuff in there.
And capsules as well.
Yeah, you can get the Inner Health Plus. By the way, if the Inner Health Plus is sitting on the shelf at the chemist, don't buy it because it's sensitive to heat. So, you should be taking it from the fridge, and when you transport it home, keep it in the fridge because it keeps the good bacteria alive.
I bought some that actually was on the shelf, and it was Inner Health Plus Go.
Oh, okay.
And it says you don't have to put it in the fridge.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I like yogurt, so I just have yogurt. So those little Yakult drinks, they're okay.
Yeah, it does the job.
They're pretty sweet, but yeah. Anyway, there you go.
So, Dr. George, summarizing what we've discussed tonight.
Oh my God!
What are your top tips for bottoms?
Top tips for owners of asses is get them swabbed.
Get them swabbed.
If someone's licked it, fingered it, touched it, shoved anything into it, kissed it gently, get it bloody swabbed every time you go and get your sexual health screening. If you are living with HIV, I would urge you to make sure that your doctor does what's called a DRE or digital rectal exam once a year to check for any lumps, bumps, or anything nasty. If you are not HIV positive, I would still recommend getting it checked out. It's a good opportunity to check the prostate, but it's a great opportunity to exclude anal cancers. All men who have sex with men, or all people who enjoy significant anal play, should be getting vaccinated for HPV. Talk to your doctor about this. It is absolutely worth getting done. They're my main dot points, I suppose. Awesome.
Some great advice there. Thanks, Dr. George, for coming in tonight.
Thanks for having me.
We got power and could lift, walk some, Before our superhero can save the world, he has to battle a very powerful foe of his own. Muscular dystrophy. Muscular dystrophy is a life-threatening, muscle-wasting disease that destroys young lives, muscle by muscle.
I'm the toughest. I'm the toughest.
Please help in the fight for a cure. Contact Muscular Dystrophy Association now at mda.org.au.
Joy is proud to support this community service message.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, drawing to a close. Big thanks to Dr. George.
Thank you, Dr. George. And just quickly before we go, we've had some on-air memberships. So Natasha from Brighton East, thank you very much. She has become a new member. And
thank you, guys.
Catherine from Brunswick East, a $50 donation as well. So thank you very much, guys.
Thank you so much. And thanks to David, our podcast man, sending our podcasts online each and every week. We will catch you next week from 9 p.m. here at Joy 94.9. Thanks, Mark, for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Now over to Declan with Indie Heads. Stay tuned.
Hide and Seek.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.